appreciate those kind words. It's a great pleasure to be here. I really appreciate the invitation to participate in this conference. The purpose of my talk is to lay a foundation for the next two speakers. We'll be focusing on protocols for synchronizing estrus and ovulation in beef, heifers, and cows. I want to begin by discussing the two major factors that affect pregnancy rate. A pregnancy rate is a function of estrus detection rate and conception rate. An estrus detection rate can be defined as the number of females detected in estrus divided by the number of females exposed to breeding. And of course, conception rate would be number pregnant divided by the number detected in estrus, or in fixed time AI, that would be the number inseminated. And this formula, as simple as it is, pertains not only to synchronization and AI, but can also apply to natural service, where the bull is the one doing the estrus detection, the inseminating, and that sort of thing. But a common question that we get when a person's beginning an synchronization or artificial insemination program is, what pregnancy rate can I expect? And this formula can be sort of helpful in thinking that through. Let's look at four different scenarios, the first one being an ideal scenario where you have not a 95% estrus detection rate and a conception rate of about 70%. That would be about as high as you could expect. When you multiply those two together, you get a pregnancy rate of 67%. Now let's examine what would happen if there's a decrease in either of those two. For example, if estrus detection rate decreases from 95% to 75%, but we hold conception rate constant, we see a decrease of pregnancy rate to 53%. Alternatively, if we hold estrus detection rate constant, reduce conception rate to 50%, our pregnancy rates reduce to 48%. And a decrease in both of those will result in a decrease in pregnancy rate to 38%. So what I want to do is just emphasize a concept that Dr. Perry mentioned at the very beginning, and that is that the good things you do in your management don't compensate for mistakes that occur, but rather those mistakes that occur can cancel out the good things that you're doing in regards to reproduction. I just want to make another point before moving on to the next slide, and that is, let's just look at this 67% number. This is actually realistic, and some people have achieved this in fixed-time AI programs or in estrus detection protocols. Let's just think about the implications of that. The implications of getting two-thirds of your cows pregnant the first day of the breeding season or within the first few days of the breeding season. As we think about AI, we're well aware of the genetic improvement that can be made, and you've just seen some producers and also Dr. Cora talk about that. But I want to just emphasize the important reproductive management advantages that occur when you get a large proportion of your females pregnant the first day of the breeding season. And to reemphasize some of the things that Eric Mosel talked about, and I thought he did a very good job of discussing how when a heifer calves can affect her longevity, I also want to emphasize the importance of when females conceive on their subsequent production. And these are some data that I got from Rick Funston, who will be speaking later in the program. And what he did is he took heifers or steers that were born the first 20 days of the calving season and compared those to heifers or steers born the third 20 days of the calving season. Let's just look at heifers. Those heifers born the first 20 days had a higher weaning weight compared to those born the third 20 days. I realize that's obvious because these heifers would be older and therefore heavier at weaning. But let's look at some other aspects of their production which might help explain the increased longevity that these heifers can see. Increased pre-breeding weight for those heifers born the first 20 days. Increased pre-calving weight. More of those heifers cycling prior to the start of the first breeding season, and an increased pregnancy rate. With the steers, those steers born the first 20 days of the calving season also had a higher weaning weight, as you'd expect due to the increased age, compared to those born the third 20 days. But what I was really surprised about in regards to these data, it would be the effect that calving date had on end product quality. For example, those steers born the first 20 days had a higher hot carcass weight, increased marbling score, higher proportion grading average choice or greater, and increased carcass value. So again, I just want to emphasize the importance that this technology gives you from a reproductive management point of view, in addition to the genetic improvement that you can make. Well, let's stop and talk for just a few minutes about some things that you need to do before the start of the breeding season, some things you need to implement before AI begins. And one of the first things you need to consider is whether or not your heifers meet the criteria for being good candidates for a synchronization and AI program. An initial question to ask would be, what's the pregnancy rate in your heifers been over the past few years? I would suggest that if it's 85% or greater over a 60 to 70 day period of time, those heifers would be good candidates for a synchronization program. If, on the other hand, it's substantially less than 85%, there may be some other management considerations that you need to put into place before implementing a synchronization program. Have your heifers received growth-promoting implants at birth or within the first 30 days of birth? I think it's well known that implanting within that first 30 days of birth will impair uterine development and therefore reduce pregnancy rates. Have you selected an appropriate target weight? This, of course, is the weight you want each of your heifers to attain by the start of the breeding season. And this has normally been recommended to be 60, maybe 65%. Now, there's some new data coming out that would suggest that perhaps one could back off of this 60 to 65% target weight somewhat. And that's a subject I'm sure that will be discussed later. But the main thing I wanted to emphasize is knowing the mature weight of your cows can be quite helpful to you in determining an appropriate target weight for your herd. At what proportion of your heifers have a reproductive tract score of 4 or greater? Now, a reproductive tract score is a subjective measurement of the sexual development of your heifers. It's performed by your veterinarian, in which he or she would palpate the uterus, the ovaries, and get an assessment of where this heifer is at in the pubertal process. It's a score ranging from 1 to 5, with 1 being heifers that would be considered infantile in regards to their tract, whereas 4s and 5s would be considered heifers that are cycling. And our recommendation would be that 50% of your heifers have a tract score 4 or 5 around 4 to 6 weeks before the start of the breeding season. Now, when it comes to the cows, you can also ask yourself, do they meet the criteria for being good candidates as well? We could still ask the question about pregnancy rate. Are we looking at a pregnancy rate of 85% or greater over the first 60 to 70 days of the breeding season? If so, you're probably good to go. What was the body condition score of your cows at calving? So we're all pretty much familiar with this scoring system of 1 to 9, where 1 would be a cow that's emaciated, 9 would be a cow that's obese. And, of course, the recommendation is cows would be a 5 or greater at calving. But what's the current body condition score of your cows as you're approaching implementing synchronization? Have they dropped off considerably, or have they been able to sort of relatively maintain their condition score? And finally, how many days postpartum will your cows be when synchronization is initiated? And we'd recommend that on the average they be 40 to 50 days postpartum. That's the average. That doesn't mean each animal's 40 to 50 days, but that would be the average of the group. And we'd recommend that you don't put a seeder into a cow that's 20 days or less postpartum. So where do I purchase the semen? I'd like to just make a case. I'd like to make 2 points to build a case for a rationale for purchasing that semen from one of the 4 major AI companies that are actually represented here today. For example, these are some data I got from Dave Patterson, where when semen from one of the 4 major AI companies was used for fixed-time insemination on about 6,750 cows, the average pregnancy rate was 61%. This involved 31 different sires. And of those 31 sires, only 3 of them were below 50%. When custom-collected semen was used, in some of these trials. The average pregnancy rate was 49%. This involves 16 sires, but seven of those were below 50%. So in addition to the difference in pregnancy rate, another strong rationale for purchasing semen from one of these four major AI companies, of course, is that they've got bulls that are used all over the nation, in fact, the world, for which there's been a lot of data collected, which has increased the accuracy of their EPDs, which then gives you a lot of confidence that you're going to be able to make the genetic improvement that you want to. This is a subject Sandy Johnson will be talking about a little bit later. I just wanted to point out, when it comes to choosing a protocol, she'll be showing you these protocol sheets that are in the back of the sire directories. And this is a tremendous tool. They're published in the back of the sire directories of those four major AI companies and some others. And these are the optimal protocols for heifers and for cows. And she'll be providing more information this afternoon about how to use those. Well, there's two fundamental principles of synchronization I'd just like to cover, that understanding these principles can be very helpful to you in choosing a protocol and understanding how these protocols work. As I said, one of my purposes today is to lay a foundation for the next two speakers. And before I cover these two principles, I just want to make you aware that if you're interested in learning more about how these protocols work, or some of the management suggestions around them, or how to utilize these products, there's three courses that have been developed. They're available to you online at no charge, and there's a handout in front of you that describes these courses, how you can access it. The link to these is at the very bottom of the page. So I'm not going to have a chance to go into a lot of detail, but if you want to learn more, this would be a tool that's available to you. So let's discuss the problem of anestrus. At the beginning of a breeding season, there are going to be heifers that have begun cycling and those that haven't reached puberty yet. Likewise, when it comes to the cows, there'll be those cows that have returned to estrus after calving and those that are still anestrus. So we've got these two populations of females. And you want to have a synchronization protocol that'll work in both populations of females if you want to maximize the number of females that conceive at the start of the breeding season. So what is it that brings a cow or a heifer into heat? And progesterone, a hormone coming from the corpus luteum on the ovary, is very important in the initiation of normal cycles. This shows basically a profile of progesterone in yellow in the blood, and you'll notice that a cow or a heifer shows heat right here. That's her first estrus, puberal estrus for a heifer, first estrus postpartum for a cow, and then she has a normal cycle. Prior to that, she has a short cycle that's not accompanied by heat. And this brief exposure to progesterone is what allows her to establish her normal cycles. So what people like myself and others have been able to do is utilize this observation, and we can then go in and, by exposing prepubertal heifers and estrus cows briefly to progesterone, in a proportion of these, it will get them to establish normal cycles. How is this done? It's done two ways. One is by injecting GnRH to induce ovulation. Another possibility is by administering a seeder, which has progesterone, or alternatively, by feeding MGA, which acts like progesterone. In each case, you can simulate this short cycle and get a proportion of your cows to start cycling. Well, how effective is this in anestrus cows? These are some data provided to me by Dave Patterson, about 2,000 cows, four different studies. And at the start of the breeding season, 57% of the cows in these studies were cycling, 43% were anestrus. Well, how effective was a progestin exposure in terms of the pregnancy rate in these anestrus cows? What we see here in the cycling cows, the fixed-time AI, the pregnancy rate was 65%. In the anestrus cows, it was 64%. So think about this. Those cows that were anestrus at the time the protocol was implemented, 43% of these cows were anestrus. of those, 65 or 64% became pregnant. And of those that didn't become pregnant to that AI, they returned 20 days later, which was really very helpful in increasing the proportion of females conceiving early. The other point is this idea of synchronizing follicular waves. This is what's made fixed-time AI possible. This is a picture of a cow's ovary, and you see this large blister-like structure with the initials DF. That stands for dominant follicle. This is an ovarian follicle. It contains the egg. It produces a hormone, estradiol, which is what brings a cow or heifer in heat. And the reason this is dominant, not only in terms of its size, but in terms of the influence that it has on follicle growth throughout on both ovaries. So this is a picture of a cow that has two follicular waves. Some have three. But what you see here is a cow showing heat. 20 days later, she comes back in heat. And in between, you see a group of follicles growing, one of which is selected to become a dominant follicle. And then once it loses its dominance, then a new wave gets started. So how do we utilize this? Well, if during this dominance phase you give an injection of GnRH, you will start the ovulation process that causes the follicle to lose its dominance, and then you can advance this next wave, or you can synchronize it, and it's the synchronized wave that you'll breed from. And you'll be seeing some protocols coming up in which this approach is used. Well, we all know if you're using estrus detection, then obviously you're breeding according to heat. But in fixed-time AI, at the time of insemination, if you've utilized this, you know that not all the animals are in heat. Some are in heat, some are not. And what effect does estrus expression have on the ability of a cow to become pregnant? Well, these are some data provided to me by George Perry, four different studies. In each situation, fixed-time AI was used. And this orange or brownish bar represents those animals that were in heat when fixed-time AI occurred. The other bar here, those animals that are not. And you see that in each case, the pregnancy rate was higher for those animals that were in heat at the time of fixed-time AI versus those that were not. So the question becomes, how do you go about determining when to do the fixed-time insemination? So when you look at these protocols, you'll see oftentimes near the end of the protocol, there's a shot of prostaglandin or luteolyse. You'll see a number of hours, and then it'll say fixed-time AI. It's 66 hours or maybe 54 hours. There'll be some time period. How important is it to adhere to that? Well, I'm going to try to build the case that that's actually quite important. And to understand that, we first have to understand, how did the AMPM rule get developed? That we all are familiar with that. That's the idea that if a cow's in heat this morning, we'll breed her this evening. If she's in heat this evening, we'll breed her the next morning. Well, these are some textbook numbers that might help us understand how this rule got developed. If we assume that this cow here is in heat for about 15 hours, and when she first showed heat, her first mount, she's having a surge of a hormone called LH, luteinizing hormone. The purpose of that hormone is it sets into place a series of events that result in ovulation about 28 to 30 hours later. The egg then might live for about 8 hours, roughly, and then it starts to age. Fertilization during that aging period can result in some problems with embryonic development. So how does the AMPM rule then work in this kind of a scenario? Well, let's suppose you're checking heat twice a day, so at 12-hour intervals. And in this cow, you pick her up in heat when she first stands. So 12 hours later, you'll deposit the semen. And frozen thawed semen will live in the tract roughly 24 hours before those cells start dying. This is dependent on the bull, I realize. But this blue bar at the beginning, that represents a period of time when these cells are obviously alive, but they haven't gained the capacity to fertilize yet. So they have to be exposed to the female tract for this period of time, and then they're capable of fertilizing. So here we have in this white bar the fertile life of the sperm. And you can see that in this case, using the AMPM rule, the fertile life of the sperm and the fertile life of the egg overlap well. Well, what happens if we pick this cow up about 6 hours later? So when we went out, when she first stood, we weren't out there, but 6 hours later, we find her in heat. We wait 12 hours, deposit the semen. Again, overlap of the fertile life of the sperm and that of the egg. Suppose we don't pick her up in heat until near the very end. Again, wait 12 hours, sorry. Wait 12 hours, next morning, deposit the semen. And what we see here, again, is an overlap of the fertile life of the sperm and the egg. So how does this relate to fixed-time AI? Obviously, we don't have all these females showing heat at one time. So we're going to have to make it, there's got to be some kind of compromise, some way of deciding the optimum time to inseminate. Well, when they develop these protocols, one of the things that is carefully looked at is the expression of estrus following the prostaglandin shot. And this shows the expression of estrus for a protocol called the 14-day CEDAR-PG protocol. This is used in heifers. This was provided to me by Dave Patterson. And we see along the bottom here are hours after the prostaglandin shot. And we see them first starting to show estrus 12 to 36 hours or so, 48 hours. But then the largest groups coming in estrus 48 to 60 hours. So what we do is go about 12 hours after this peak time period, and that's how you identify the 66-hour time point as the optimum time in this protocol to inseminate. Of course, we've got some animals at each end here that provide a bit of a problem. We've got some of these females that showed heat rather early. So what happens to them with this breeding time? Or we've got some animals that haven't shown heat yet. Well, let's look at these animals first of all that are coming in heat around 36 hours or so. So in that case, they're in estrus, let's say at 36 hours after prostaglandin. But we're breeding them at 66 hours. So that's 30 hours later. So what happens is we're putting semen in here. And you notice there's this period of time where those sperm have to gain the capacity to fertilize. And so this window is somewhat narrow then, where the fertile life of the sperm and the fertile life of the egg overlap. But still, we can get some of those pregnant. What about these females out here, though? They haven't shown heat yet. Well, in those, what we're doing is they haven't shown heat, so they're not having their own surge. So we create a surge for them by injecting GnRH. The sperm might live 24 hours and start dying. And we see here we got a bit of a problem in that by the time ovulation has occurred, our sperm are going downhill. Now, you'll hear that some bulls do better in fixed-time insemination protocols than others. And it might be, we don't know for sure, it might be because perhaps their sperm live a little bit longer in the tract. And therefore, this fertile lifespan and lifespan of the egg overlap a little more effectively. Well, I hope that gives you some understanding of how this time is determined, but more importantly, why you need to pay close attention to sticking to that time. In closing, George wanted me to just link together for you some of the biological factors that occur from the time you give that first GnRH until you find out your cow's pregnant. What's really going on? It seems a bit like a black box, but what do we know about some of the biological mechanisms that are going on that are important for pregnancy to occur? I'm just going to show you the results of a study. It's got about 1,000 cows in it. It was done at the USDA Center in Miles City, Montana at Fort Keogh. We did that with Tom Geary. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some paths. We used a path analysis, and it just links together the important biological factors. So we start here with that injection of GnRH, the purpose of which, as I showed you earlier, is to synchronize a follicular wave. Well, what happens after you inject that GnRH? Well, you synchronize a wave, and this leads then to a larger follicle at the second GnRH and insemination, compared to a cow that doesn't ovulate there. These numbers, all they're going to tell you is how important this is. The larger the number, the more important the effect. Well, what happens is as follicle size at GnRH2 goes up, this means that once they ovulate, they make a larger corpus luteum, but more importantly, this produces more progesterone, that hormone I told you about that's important for maintaining pregnancy. Well, as progesterone goes up, pregnancy rate went up. So there's an advantage to synchronizing a wave in that you get a larger follicle at breeding, that Nix corpus luteum makes more progesterone, and that leads to more pregnancies. The other thing that happens is if they respond to that first GnRH, you get more estradiol at breeding, which is when you, which is when you gave the GnRH. Which is when you give the GnRH to induce ovulation. The thing we found is that these two are related. Larger the follicle, the more estrogen. We found that as estrogen went up, it allowed that Nix corpus luteum to make more progesterone. And as estradiol went up, more cows became pregnant. Finally, if they ovulate to that first GnRH, you're going to after they ovulate, they form a corpus luteum. So that means that when you give your prostaglandin, you have higher progesterone. So that's a positive relationship. And when progesterone was higher at prostaglandin, this meant higher progesterone 7 days after AI. Well, I know this looks like a tangled spider web that may not make much sense. If you don't get anything else out of it, I just want to try to convince you that this is a complicated process and that a lot of people are working on. If I was to simplify it for you, there's three things we found that had the biggest effect on pregnancy rate to fixed time AI in cows, and that is high estradiol at the time you're inducing ovulation. That was important. High progesterone 7 days after AI. That was important. And we also found a relationship where as cow age went up to a certain point, at least beginning with two-year-olds up to four, five, six-year-olds, that as cow age went up, pregnancy also went up. So in summary, what I tried to tell you today is that pregnancy rate is based on two things, estrus detection rate and conception rate. And that a successful AI program requires very careful attention to detail. And there's things you need to do in advance of this program or implementing a program that will be very helpful to you in increasing the probability of success. I covered a couple basic principles of synchronization, the reason for which, if you understand those, it can help you make a good decision about which protocol to use. And second of all, in the event, which does not occur very often, but in the event something goes wrong, it might help you figure out or troubleshoot what went wrong. With those last slide or two, I tried to convince you there's a lot of variables that contribute to successful establishment of pregnancy. There's a lot of people in this room that have worked very hard at trying to unravel those variables. That estrus expression at the time of fixed time AI is quite important for the establishment of pregnancy, and that finally, the most important variable we've found for pregnancy success was elevated estradiol around the time of breeding. And with that, I'd like to thank Dave Patterson, Scott Kipoler, and George Perry, you all who helped me with this, and look forward to answering your questions later on.